When we were sitting there, the Lord quickened to me when Pastor was talking about building on foundations, and the song was about that. And the Lord reminded me, every time I've made a major move in ministry in Thailand, I've been a missionary in Thailand for 30 years, and so every time the Lord has given me dreams of things that I needed to avoid or pray about or what I was going to go through or whatever. And he brought one to my remembrance, and I really felt he wanted me to share this with you, because even though parts of it may pertain only to me, a lot of it would pertain to anybody. And so anyway, the Lord gave me this dream, and my family, my boys were small, my husband and I, we were dropped off on an island, and like by a helicopter, and it was a beautiful island, and it was so peaceful and serene there, and we were so happy and so excited. And that night, there came a great storm, and the waves just kept banging against the house, and the flood waters just kept going up higher and higher. And I had never seen such a fierce storm hit anything. And I mean, and we've been in tsunami, where the tsunamis hit. And so, I mean, I had never seen anything so great as this. And this was like a 3 or 4 story house. And so we kept climbing higher and higher. And we got on the top floor, couldn't go any farther. And there was a bed. And my husband and my two boys and I got into the bed, because the flood waters was all the way up to even with the bed. One more wave and we would go under. Now, tied on to this bed, and this is something probably personal for us, but tied on to this was a boat. And I kept telling my husband, I'm running all over the bed. One more wave and we're going to drown. Let's get in the boat. And then I took my cell phone, I called back to the States and talked to different pastors I knew, and they said, well, you know, the storm is too severe, we can't get to you, you know, just get in that boat, and then when everything dies down, we'll come and get you out of there. So I told my husband what they said. He said, I'm not getting in that boat. And so I thought, David, one more wave, we are gone. The kids are going to drown, we're all going to drown, you know. And he said, I am not getting in the boat. And my boys and him were laying there in that bed, very peaceful. I'm the only one running around all over the place, you know. And finally, I thought, okay. And I just had to put my trust in the Lord. And I laid down on that bed, and we went to sleep. Well, the next morning, when we woke up, you know, we were still alive. The birds were chirping. The sun was shining. We went downstairs, and there was like total devastation all around us. But everything was just beautiful. I mean, you know, the skies, the birds, the sunshine, everything. And it's like God says, I brought you through. I brought you through. And this is something that, you know, God just quickened to me, that we all sometimes have storms that are so severe in our personal lives that we don't know how in the world we're going to ever make it through. It looks like our whole life is going to be destroyed. Our families are going to be destroyed. Everything that we've worked for may be destroyed. And we see no way out. But, you know, God is that bed. That's our foundation. And if we just can get peace in Him and lie down in that bed, when it's all over, that sun will be shining. The birds will be singing. You're still going to be left standing. Your families will be left standing. And I just believe that is a word that God had for all of us today, because the whole day has seemed to go this way. But anyway, changing gears. I'm just going to share just a second about what we do, because my husband, I know, is going to be bringing the word, because a lot of you don't know who we are. And we are missionaries in Thailand. My husband was my first convert whenever I got to Thailand. And 6 years after that, we ended up getting married. And so in 1995, I mean, we had come to the States. And in 1995, the Lord instructed us to go back after he had gotten his citizenship. And so we went back, and the first year, or no, first few months, we were there. We went into the an opium warlord's headquarters, and we did a lot of ministry in there. And my husband is from that people group. And so God just did some tremendous miracles. There was a lot of children in the hospital, little boy soldiers that they were like crippled from the knees down. They couldn't walk, 350 of them. And so we went around praying for them, and we had a feeding program, and the Lord began to heal them. And so the doctor, when we first got there, he had this big Buddha thing around his neck, and one day he came to us. He said, "Now I'm a Christian." He had a big cross, you know. He said, "Now I'm a Christian." He said, because he said, "None of my medicine could cure those kids." He said, "Your food has not had time to cure those kids." He said, "And yet 50 cases of my worst cases," he said, "those kids are well and walking and going back into the army." And he said, "It has to be your God." So anyway, the Lord just started everything out this way. Well, we went through a lot, but basically for the past almost 20 years, we've been building foundation. And we have been rescuing kids that have been trafficked and who are misplaced children with no citizenship of any country. And we've been raising them, and we've now got three Bible schools. We've got, three churches. We do Bible schools, short-term Bible schools. Right now, we're getting ready to start a long-term Bible school and mission school. And a Christian school. We've had Christian schools off and on, but we're getting ready to start another one because we didn't have teachers. I was the teacher, so for 5 years I did this school, and it was very successful, but it finally got too many kids, and I was having to teach my own sons, and so I had to let something go. And so, but now we have teachers coming, and so we'll begin a school again. But our major thing this year is when we get back, we'll be going and starting a new work in Burma. And so we're really excited about that, because ever since I've been in Thailand, I have worked with people from Burma. Never worked with Thai people. Always people from the other side in Burma. And so I remember I used to stand on the banks of the river, the Mae River, looking into Burma, just because back then nobody could go in, no foreigners could go in there. And I just cry and pray, "Lord, when can I go into the promised land? When can I go into the promised land?" And we feel that this is time that we do this now. We have land already over there. And so we're just waiting to see what God is going to direct us to do. We're really excited about it. And so anyway, at the end of this, we'll be showing something about our children and our place over there, so you can understand it a little more. Okay, I'll turn it over to my husband.
Thank you, honey.
We've got many preachers in our family. Like, one of my daughters preaches, my son, two of my sons preach, and we both preach. And when you get us all in one service, it's like, it could go on forever.
Yeah, I just called my son. He's in Midland, Michigan, with his fiancés. And preparing for the wedding in the this December. So and I told him, I said, "Hey buddy," I said, "I miss my preaching partner. You know, usually he's the one that do the introductions, and he's funny. Yeah, I wish one day I would bring it back here." The Dutch Center is just kind of the top rank of our the memories, and you know, because of before we launch out to the mission field in 1995. Dutch Center is the second church. That's who get behind us, EFCM Church, for more than 10 years. I think, more than 10 years. And then I remember that in the cold winter, actually spring, winter to me, I strolled into my boys, you know, the young ones were 6 months old, and the other ones are 2 years old, you know, came into the parking lot, you know, we were freezing, you know. And so So that was the memory right here, that and then. So glad to be back. And the this morning I believe that the worship teams, I think that pave up the road. I know the pastor introduction, it's pretty, you know, the introduction and connecting with the congregation that we used to be a part of here. And then my wife kind of briefed what we are doing and what we have done in Thailand. I might try to conclude with that subject. But first of all, I believe I would like to bring, you know, the Word of God that been burning in my heart for all these years before I went back to mission field. The prayer in my life is that if you know, the last generation leaders, if they can reproduce the same mentalities of the baby boomer, you know, work ethic, energies, and then their enthusiasm about the work and about the life, I think we're going to live 10 times better than what we're living right now. Hello? Come on, baby boomer did a lot of job that what we are achieving right now. If you look back the last 20 years, not very good. Not very good. Very, very, very. The baby boomer, I think, just they look like they built these countries. So usually I love to talk with the elderly folks. You know, they are more or less, you know, they've been to at least Vietnam War or Korean War. Some of them are, if I bless, I met with the one in Second World War. And I would tell them, have you been to the Pacific? They said, oh yeah, I was in Philippines. And have you been to Burma? You know, and some of them are in Burma. So it's a kind of a good conversation to start with, you know, what they have done. I really give the good credit on that generations. I believe that we will take care of them good, this generation. I think this generation will work hard and put back all those social security money so they have something to live. Well, just stop right there. All right, let God get back into the Lord's work. Through this year, since I land my feet on the United States, you know, that my enthusiasms and my joys was overwhelming that what I can learn from here. Even though God blessed me with American citizenships. You know, that in the beginning of it, you know, the citizenship is not my first priorities. My first priority is what I can learn from these people and from these great countries so I can change, number one, among my societies, among the Shan people, among the countries that under the dictatorships and suffering from the basic human right. You know, how can we feed the poor? Now, how can we give hope to the hopeless? I look at the United Nations. You know, I used to write the United Nations a letter every month, because I want to work for the United Nations. You know, the first, the United Nations secretaries, who remember it? The first one. Do you know that he's half Shan, my people? Utan. Remember that? Utant. He was so smart, we kick him out. The Burma kick him out. All right. But he was so intelligent, 25 languages, no earphone needed. Come on. I mean, where do you find that kind of person nowadays? I speak 7. I can translate, read and write 4 languages fluently. But nothing compared to Utant. You know, Israel and Syria, they're almost into war. But in less than 24 hours, it's going to be a third world war right there on. Utant went there. 15 minutes, he solved the problems. Peace right there on. You know, when he died, Japan bought his brain. I don't look at the 24 million, I think. During that time, $24 million. They want to study his brain. All right? The Japan bought it. So now they brought his body back into Burma. So now the all of the generation, that time I remember I was fourth grade. And then when they brought the United Nations, the first secretary, one of the best we have ever had. And then and stopped by all these countries, like the Germany, you know, the United States, all these capital cities. And people were just overwhelmed, welcoming and they honor him. And when we come back to his own countries, there's seven people right there waiting for his coffin. The pilot that who brought the coffin was so disappointed, they didn't even stay for the rest. They just took off right away. And now all the university students, and they now gather around together and try to bring that coffin back into the universities. And then the government found out that we cannot let them have that coffin. He said, go and bury him in regular cemetery. He's a hero of our country. The whole world will honor him. Why bury him in the regular cemeteries? Bury him in the hero cemetery of the who and who. So they didn't listen, you know. They buried regular cemetery, and at night the student went and dug it up, brought it back into the university, and then, you know, they buried in the middle of the national university. And then the government were mad. And so they with the military, they surrounded the university, starving the students. No water, no food. And then guess what? And all the citizens, they pack up all the lunch in a sack with a slingshot and drive them around and keep shooting out inside the university. This going for months. And then finally, the government said, you know, I said, we cannot let this happen. They storm in. With the military, they stormed the university, killed thousands of students. I remember we were without school for 6 months. We were young, fourth grade. We were happy. We were no school for 6 months. But I retract it back. So, the subject I wanted to lead to is that they are imparting, you know, our knowledge, our potentials, you know, back to the next generations. I believe because of Utant, I think look like my ambitious growth. I said, man, look at that. Half Sean. Look at that. He says that the head of the United Nations. You know, so kind of to build my enthusiasm in studies, in what to do, you know, for life. So that always that's, you know, my visions and my thoughts. I always want to live for, you know, the changing others and giving others the better life. So that end of my life into the freedom fighter as a rebel groups that who fighting against the Burmese government. That's where I end up in the border of the Thailand and Burma. That's where the Shan Stick Army, which is settled. That is what the connection with what my wife just mentioned that we have to when we returned back in 1995, we went back to Opium Warlord headquarters. So now, Shan Army, because of, even though we have enthusiasm, we have the patriotics that are trying to find and gain back our Shan states, which is our own right in Burma. But doing something, you still need to feed yourself. You need the bullet to fight, at least to defense. We have none of those. So the Burmese were slaughtering us. Not like that. They were backed by the German military arsenal, that which is G3, G4, with a ban in the United Nations. You're not supposed to use that kind of weapon. You know, if you shot at you, only go in only a little hole and blow up on your back about this big, on the back. You're not supposed to use those. But they don't care. And then now United Nations and then United States was supporting Burma because they want the Burma open as a communications, so they would supply them with the helicopter for the militaries or drug annihilations, you know, project. So they would pump them with the money, but Burma used all those strength, you know, and then to annihilate, you know, all the ethnic groups in Burma. Now Shan is the only one ethnic groups that remains strong right now. We have 8 million strong. So now Shan people, resistance, doesn't have anything to protect themselves. So finally, we have to lean into the opium warlord. I said, hey, we let you grow opium in our lands, but you give us bullets and rice. Opium warlord, okay. He said, I put you in the front line. Don't let Burmese come in. I be give whatever you want. All right, this is a good deal, you know. So that's how we became under the opium warlord army. So that is what the story I want to connect with. And my brother was in the opium warlord army. So after he graduated high school, he left. Bam, you know, because of this is what the Maharwan family is. Now it's good. All right, now it's good. Back then, we were the front runner of, you know, the most of the opium business. Because of why? Because of who bought the opium? Anybody know who bought the opium? British and American. All right, to do the medicines. All right, Afghanistan grow them. You know that, and then we grow them, and then we ship them legally that time. But later on, somebody quite smart came with the formula producing the heroin. Now heroin and go to almost you know, we call it number 4. That's on the white form that now the all the Western, you know, their drug, you know, the user love to use, and you can inject so pure, you know. Yeah. So so it's a big process, all right. To do it is not easy, you know. So these, you know, the business was, you know, they're quite demanding and booming, and you know, usually we don't enjoy all those. It's death penalty. Do you know that in our army, you caught with the drugs, bad death penalty. You use drug, death penalty. Execution is every Saturday. It's a market days. Lining up, and then with a 2x4, you just chopping right there. That is finished. You don't even need to use a bullet. So, now Shan people, all right, who have no idea, we die on the front line, all right, and we die because of the drug as well, because of. Think about the with a full enthusiasm, like my generation, we are 38 of them, all right, when the time, you know, I graduate in 81, and then we join the army, all right, we thought, all right, Shan Army looks so good, and my brother sent some picture, all right, in a full uniform with the M16 machine guns and fighting for the freedoms. My goodness, the young man would be, yeah, all right, that's what I would like to be. So, and then now we, all of us, you know, most of them are capable of, you know, going to the engineering schools and medical schools and law school. You know, we are high grade, but because of Burmese regime, we don't. You know, we just doesn't have enthusiasm to go to their college because they wouldn't give us that major either. They would give us a lower major like teaching, farming, agriculture. That's what they give us because they don't want us to be educated into the law firms, into the high education. So that's why that's all right. Let's join the rebel groups. 38 of them, you know, that we joined the army. So we came in. Of course, my brother's already in there. He was captain that time, and my uncle was one of the general of the one of the battalions. Of course, my uncle was, you know, pull me on the sides, and you know, I was his sidekick. All right, you know, and then you know, carry his pistol, you know the. Taking care of his horse, and you know, I was pretty good spot, you know, highlight spot. People saluting at you, you know. I mean, that time, 80,000 young men, well armed. You're talking about my goodness, massive army, only men and boys. So I was thrilled. But at night, with my brother and I, we would talk, all right, with the colleagues that we have. And then they would tell us, you know, he said, don't join this army, man. Don't join this army. I said, why not? You guys did it, man. Look at that, man. You guys are awesome. I said, no, you have no idea. You have no idea. This army is not fighting to gain our independence. All right, they're just sustaining to do the business, which is an opium warlord and his partner, that they're trying to do this. They're not helping us to get independence. So I believe that that moment, I believe that God handpicked me and then wouldn't let anything go right. And then, so when your life is not going right, you're kind of thinking about God, are you there, out there, you know? Come on, you know? Not for me, I just want to help others. So that's why, and then I left the army camp, don't know where to go, and asked the one of the monastery on the Burma side, close by the border of Thailand, and can I sleep here? And then the monk said, you can sleep here, but you got to get up early and prepare the food. I said, I'll do that. As my life living in the temple, right at the border, despair, hopeless. You're talking about is it the bottom of the bottom life I think that I have ever been. Finally, I said, I got to have a job. You know, finally, I said, I got to have a job. I cannot live like this. Finally, I told the monk, I said, can you announce in the village that I'll give a English lesson free, and I teach them math. So I end up with every evening, the kids will come for an English lesson and math. So I would teach them in the temple. I would like to remind you, if God has some potential that implanted in you young, or no matter what age is that, so please use them for God. And God will do something amazing door. He's going to open it for you. And I did at that time. I wasn't even a believer. I was a Buddhist, and I did something with my potential right there, that for others. And then guess what? One day the five-star general from Thailand came and gave offering to this Buddhist temple, and he saw me. And then he asked the monk, who's the young boy? Oh, he's an educated young boy. He speaks English very good. I said, I know. He said that. Would you tell him that, would you like to work for me? I have a restaurant on the other side. And guess what? The next day, I dressed up. I went to his restaurant. And then I got a job at the restaurant as a dishwasher. But your high hope, all right, I speak English, all right, I'm the top, or I'm educated. I should get a better job. But start from the bottom. The restaurant have 120 tables and talking about dishes. Mount it up. After it's done, like I look at my hand and my feet. I'm like a 100-year-old guy. Wrinkles. You know, you've been in the water so long and your hand was just turned. So, man, I said, God, are you there? Or are you there? You know, come on, show me if you're there. And guess what? God brought the missionary into the restaurant. And then Paula's, and then her friends and missionary, they walked into the restaurant. And guess what? I was the only one who speak English, washing dishes over there. Nobody can communicate. They go, David, like they are foreigner. They call a Roman Catholic. Roman Catholic here, you know? Went over there, and then I take the orders, talk to them, and I was so pleased. Sometimes when God show you a glimpse of hope for your life, look like you saw them all. Look like you see the whole mile, you know. Look like I saw something in them that I knew it. They got it. They got it what I've been longing for. You know, finally they introduced Christ, you know, into my life, and that's changed the whole things. God had been so good, all right? He handpicked you. You know, he knew you before you were born. And then he will open the wider window of the potential if you just use what you got within you. So in this last few minutes, I would like to go into the life of the man and woman of God that I have learned. I'm so blessed. When I came to the United States, all right, D.L. Osborne was still strong. The greatest missionary I have ever met, Dr. Lester Sumrall, was one of my teachers. I shook his hands. I shook Dr. Oral Roberts' hands. I think God just bring accidentally into the, you know. I'm kind of, my wife always said, you know, you have a star struck. I just got to get to know that people, you know, just who's somebody. Especially, you know, that if come to the man of God, you know. And the so one day I was ready to go back to Thailand, finish a Bible college, and I'm waiting for our flight. And right in front of me, I look at it, this was a baseball cap. I said, no way. That's Oral Roberts. Hi, Oral Roberts, you know. And then, you know, Oral, usually they have a bodyguard and everything. But he's alone sitting right there. I know his bodyguard is somewhere. I knew it. And the I said, honey, I got to go. I can't help it. So I went over there. And then I said to him, sir, are you Oral Roberts? He looked at me. Yes, I am, son. And so I said, my name is, you know, David. I'm from Thailand. I just finished the Bible college. I'm going back to my people to share the good news, what I have learned here. He looked at me with his tear in his eye. Son, I'm believing in you. He said, go for it. I shook his hand. Oh, my goodness. I'm somebody, you know. In a Bible college as well, you know, the body of Christ taught me the Pentecostal handshake. Anybody understand? Pentecostal handshake. All right. So a lot of people, because I'm a foreign student, so people, you know, the pastor always give me a Pentecostal handshake. You know, the first time I was shocked, you know, they shook a hand, they left something in the hand. So, try to give it back, you know. No. He said, and then for the guy said, that's Pentecostal handshake. I said, I like it. I like Pentecostal handshake. So, and here, I want to give a Pentecostal handshake to Pastor Lester Sumrall, all right, the greatest missionary, you know, who fought demons face to face, you know. I said, I got to shake his hands. And all right, you know, on the chapel, almost done, I can't wait, you know. I mean, I kind of screwed myself in the back, you know, when he walked toward, I would run toward him and give him a handshake. And guess what? I ran toward the Pastor Sumrall, and I found myself in the air. Some guy grabbed my neck and big black dude, you know. You know, man, I was. And then Pastor Lester Sumrall said, son, what do you want? I said, I want to give you Pentecostal handshake. He looked at me and said, I take that Pentecostal handshake anytime, son. So I shook his hand. I gave him the $3, you know. I was so happy. The guy said, oh, okay, that's okay. And then back, you know. That was the last time I approached a man of God. So not long ago, that I was watching the man of God before they faded away and go to be with the Lord. The first one was that the ABC, New Media interviewed the Billy Grahams. They said, Billy Grahams, you are so popular and you are so good and changed so many lives. Why don't you be a candidate for the president of the United States? He looked at the new media and then he said, why should I step down to take a position, which is now I'm a top level of serving the most highest gods in the world? I said, yeah, that's my man. All right. He was proud to be a PK and MK, you know. So that's for the PK, all right? So, all right. And then Oral Roberts. They asked Billy Graham again. I was like, you know, if you have a chance to redo it all over again, would you do it differently? Billy Graham answered. He said, yes, I would. What would you do? He said, I would take 12 young men and women, and I pour my life into it and turn them loose. I missed that. I said, whoa, all right, got it, you know. And then the same thing, they interviewed Oral Roberts. Said, Oral Roberts, you live by faith and you impact so many lives. Change the course of the Pentecostal, you know, their generation. He said, well, if you redo it all over again, you know, would you do it differently? Oral Roberts confidently said, yes, I would do it differently. I would never do what I have done. I take the 12 young men and women and pour my life into it like Jesus did. Since then, my heart was burning that to train up young men and women of God and then let them be you know, who they are in Christ. So 1995, when we went back over there, we acquainted straight right away with this, all these boy soldiers from 6 years old to 17. We met them, 2,000 of them, marching. This is training, all right? Several thousand is already in the army, holding guns. But it is training, that's where we met. And then I told Paula, look at these young kids. Look at this young kid. Didn't have a chance to place a matchbox car. You know, I would like them to have the McDonald's Happy Meal. Each one, you know. They didn't. They became a killing machine right here. And guess what? Out of all those 2,000 young boys, 800 of them are orphans. And that what is this? They want to hand it to us. After all the army, you know, the opium warlords surrender into Burmese government and then left Shan army and all these boy soldiers just stranded in the jungle. That is where we are there at the moment. And now they call us, all right, 800 orphans. David, he said, you are a missionary, is that right? I said, yes, I'm a missionary. We just got there. I didn't have a chance to even have an American kitchen for my wife. We're still living in the motels. And the things happened. So I said, all right, I'll take 400. I have no idea where I'm going to put the 400 kids from another countries. We live in the border. No citizenship of any country. Not Burma. Not Thailand either. And who I'm trying to bring them into Thailand. So finally, we have to lean to God. God, all right, it's more than what we can, you know, we can do. What should we do? What should I do? So we fast and pray for 3 days. Finally, came to the answer, God, I'm not going to do it on my own abilities. God, you handpick the boys. I raise it for you. We end up with 36 boy soldiers. And that is where the orphanage started. In our goal and our mind, that our vision, the orphanage is what? The last thing that we're going to do. First, you preach the gospel. Number two, you start the churches. You know, three, Bible school, and all these. And later on, last one, orphanage. But finally, the orphanage was the first one. Do you know, when you have an orphanage, you're going to give everything you got. You give everything you have so they can eat three meals a day. Sometimes 3 days a meal. But, you know, people say, oh, David and Paula, they have an orphanage right there. They must be very, a big responsibility. Guess what? He said, let me show you the good side of this orphanage. Think about it, that 36 boy soldier, well-disciplined. Look like if this congregation were all trained by the Marine Corps. All right, pastor, you don't have to do nothing. These guys were just, yes, sir, everything on the spot, on time, early, they do everything. You came in and then you just have to just, hello? These boy soldiers, they might look at orphan, and people look at them all with a snotty nose, you know, helpless, can't they? Hey, my orphan was one of the top, the best. They get up at 3:30, fold their bed, neatly, nicely, the shoe, everything on, brush their teeth, wash their face, sweep all around our orphanage area. And then when I got up, they were lining up and, sir, what shall we do today? I'm still with my toothbrush. My goodness, I can't live like that. I got to be prepared to give them something to do. So they were that disciplined. They are not a burden at all. And guess what? When we introduced God to them, praise and worship, whoa, you can't believe it. Man, it's just the spirit just move. Even the missionary from Vietnam, China, they were calling Paula, can your boy pray for me? Look like they change everything every time they pray. And guess what? We get all the report back that because of the prayer of our orphans. See, this generation, this was 18 years ago. 18 years ago. More than 10 years, this church was a part of it, raising all these boys. That was the best group. All right, and after that, and we have a, you know, second group, third group, you know, that we've been raised. We raised more than 100 kids now. Now they are married, in ministry, working, you know, in the you know, the best hotel. They're in the societies everywhere. Most of them are still with us because of, you know, the ministry getting bigger, and so they are taking a responsibility. So that is a good news about the what raising up the next generation. That is what I would like to just, you know, just talk to the generation, and then for the PK and MK, and then the Christian kids. All right, we are the best the arena or circle of the next generation that will change the world for a better place to live. I think God has to rely on each and all of us right here. I think that to change the world. And I believe that the church will change the society, the church will change the nation, the church will change the world. It's happening out there. You might not see that much in the United States, but out there, it is happening. In Thailand, they're so proud of their claiming as they're the Buddhist nation. Guess what? Not anymore. Because the missionary raised up those orphanage, and now all those orphanage and children's home, now they became a senator, politician, and my goodness, mayor, doctor, lawyer. In the university now, so most of their, they said more than, I don't know, 5 out of 10 of the university students are now converting back into the Christianity. The family were threatening, you became a Christian, I'm not going to send you the money, you know, we're going to kick you out of our family. There, I love you, I'm going with Christianity. They stand. They go for it. So this is what's changing in Thailand because of the missionary. So missionary is very vital to be able to, you know, to stand in the gap between the church and the vision of what God has for the world. I would like to leave with the scripture on the 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2. Please read it again and ask Holy Spirit to reveal you. All right. So, I will read it in the New Living Translation. So, read verse 1 and verse 2. All right. So Paul said to Timothy, Timothy, my dear son, be strong through the grace that God gives you in Christ Jesus. You have heard me teach things that have been confirmed by many reliable witnesses. Now teach these truths to other trustworthy people. The other translation, teach an enable young man who will be able to pass them on to the others. Simply just impart all the gifts and all the knowledge you have to the young generation that who love to help others. That is the key words. I believe that Jesus, all right, with his 12, he changed the world. And then Apostle Paul, one young man, Timothy's, and then changed the new church, you know, the emerging the book of Acts. I think we are living on the continue of the book of Acts. I like that in Acts 29, where we are right now. I would like to, you know, just to leave you with this word. Raising up Timothy's, raising up the next generations, is the key vitals of the church growth. If we can keep all these young kids at 20 down, 35 down in the church, you don't have to worry about the church growing for the next generation. And then we got to just support them, give them what they need. They need an electric guitar, buy them an electric guitar, put them up there. bottom of base. They want to play soccer? Bottom of soccer balls and a soccer shoe. Let's do it. If they just have what they need, the young people will never leave the church. The reason they leave the church is because of is what they want for their life is not in the church. I mean, the good things. So I just want to encourage, you know, parents, grandparents, let's support our young groups. Anything that they talk about God, go for it 100%. Anything that good things, let's support them. So let them know that what God really is, that what we knew of. I think we have so much confidence that how God so real is. But, you know, we wasn't doing really a good job just to pass it on to the next generation of our kids and young kids. The missionary story used to make my heart cry. And I wanted to be one so bad to be a missionary. And we need those to come back into the church. Now, being serving God as a pastor, it's the best job you ever have. That everybody would, I'm going to be a pastor. I'm going to try to be a missionary. We want that enthusiasm, you know, to rise up among our church again. I believe God was going to be really pleased with that. And also, I think the church will grow. And then I believe that we can fulfill the purpose what God wants us, you know, to fulfill on this earth. So, for the we will show you the little clip right here, not with the boy that we've been, that God's been, you know, raising up and impacting with His word. Go ahead.
ไม่สูงค่ะชื่อข้าเป็นชายและข้ามีน้องชื่อเคลับแล้วก็ข้าก็เลยเมื่อนั้นเองข้าก็เลยภาวะข้าในก็เลยกว่าจอมกาดกุฏิกุเรียนให้ก็เลยย้อนกินย้อนเงินที่ไหนเลยเลยอยู่กว่าเป็นวันเป็นวันก็เต็มมือนั่นอาสากอมอก7ขบ
ไม่สงค่าค่ะจือป้อนค่ะย่าพี่น้องค่ะปอเวลาค่ะต้อยหลานเพลเฮิดมันเอาสันมีนี่ปอนะคะขันนอนขันนอนก็มรับกับว่าเจียมน่ะเขาก็บ้วมแล้วก็มจังเดิน
มาสุขะข้าชื่อสนันย่อมือขาอาสักหมอกไรหมอกสีขมในปอขาไรเสียงกว่าย่อยุ่มความบ่หึงก็ไรมีหมู่จุ่มซึกดีไรเข้ามาย่อก็ไรมีอามิงว่ากูเฮิร์นตักดิไลกว่าเป็นตักดิตักดูไลกับโฮมจอมยอกก็เบิร์นนั้นแหละปออันเป็นปอสินแน่กว่ายอกคาก็ไลไลเป็นตัวแทนในครอบครัวยอกกับเป็นซึก
ไม่สงค่าคาจินิตี้เมื่อข้าอยู่ในซึ่งในอาซาคาฮาโคแล้วก็กำในปอขาวอะไรส่งขามามาตีปอขาวอะไรเลิกขามาแต่เดี๋ยวมาเตียนเปียเขาตีแล้วก็อะไรส่งขามาตีโฮมเมอร์เมื่อนั้นในขบวนขาหูในหาขบวนว่าครบโคขาในห้าขาแล้วก็อะไรแปดขาย่อ
ไม่ส่ง
ข
าค่ะจ
ิ๊บ
คร
ับ
พี่สาวก็หางานทำแล้วก็สุดท้ายก็ถูกขายเข้าสู่กันค่ะ จริงแล้วก็ไม่ถูกกับถูกขายแต่เกือบจะถูกคนอื่นเอาเข้าไปอยู่ในกักขังชีวิตตอนนั้นก็เหมือนกับไม่มีค่าก็เหมือนกับไม่มีใครต้องการ
ในช่วงที่ข้าเจอI'm sorry.